You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow with Nick Kunze from Sandon Private Wealth, joined by David Shapiro, for the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities. David, were you invited to the Cyril Ramaphosa symposium this afternoon in Sandton to talk about all sorts of wonderful ideas for investing in South Africa, which Nick Kunze, incidentally, spoke to me about this morning, because he could see all the luminaries, all the Illuminati gathering in somewhere called Alice Lane or something. Did you go? No.
With my invitation flashing past the window, it obviously didn't land on my desk, obviously.
No, it didn't, but David's did.
I didn't even know it was taking place.
There you go.
I never crack an invite for any of those. Occasionally I get an invitation from the Reserve Bank to attend some kind of minor presentation or thereafter. You know, there it's, I don't get much. I even turned down an invitation to our office party. So
I'll tell you how I came across it, and it shows how bad our local PR is, because I actually picked it up on the Financial Times, which I subscribed to, and it was part of the weekly things to watch out for, along with speeches from Trump and various else. They said, watch out for the second investment conference in Johannesburg. So,
of course, today's the 5th. That's right, the 5th and the 6th. I'm sorry. I thought it was tomorrow and the next day.
You sound so believable as well.
I honestly did. I know that they've been highlighting it, that there is this investment conference. And I think most people are aware of the truth.
Guys.
Yeah, I know. I think most people are aware of the truth. And I think that while all these efforts are very valiant and, you know, we support them, I still think there's so much groundwork to do before people are going to invest in this country. I know it's a lot of promises are being made, but I think that once we start to show them, maybe there will be some follow through. But I think it's a long road ahead.
The thing is, David and Nick, is that there used to be something called the LME dinner, which was the London Metal Exchange dinner. Mm. And all the copper and zinc and nickel and dealers would all come together, and they'd descend on a particular hotel in London or a couple of hotels, and they'd have this dinner, and it would be fantastic, and everyone would give speeches, and you'd get all sorts of plaudits and that sort of thing. But what happened was, in the corridors of the hotels like the Dorchester and the Park Lane, in the evening, after the dinner or the next day, that's where the real business would be done. And I would imagine that it's actually quite a thing. It's almost like people are nasty about Davos, and I've been one of them. But what happens after, before and after Davos is important, because you get all those people together at one time, and that's an unusual event. So, David, although we're quite cynical about these things, perhaps they are useful as well.
No, I'm not saying they're not useful, but and I think they must continue to talk. But I think there's a lot of ground level that needs to be addressed before we can attract any kind of investment. No manufacturer, no industrialist is going to come into a country where we haven't sorted out Eskom. I mean, you know, you don't need to be a genius to understand that. And I think those are the issues that that people will want to hear. And it's okay giving talk. You want to see their action. You want to see their plans. And, once those are in place and there's a proper industrial policy that they're prepared to stand by for 10 years rather than changing it every year, then things will happen. So I think when we talk about structural reforms, I think these are the issues that, that will govern whether investment comes into this place or not. But I think it's too premature now. It's not, I don't think Cyril has made a stamp on this, on the administration or on the economy enough to attract. So, no, it'll be nice. We'll change business cards and everybody's going to have a great time. Listen, South Africa's a very hospitable country, and you can really have a jol here, So I think conferences here are
you just can't keep the lights on. Yeah.
This is very interesting, actually. I'm just looking at world leaders now and going through a little bit of a list here. And the two that stick out as having been successful businessmen in different ways are Cyril Ramaphosa and Donald Trump, neither of whom I think have covered themselves in glory. If you look at someone like Jeremy Corbyn or Boris Johnson, Boris Johnson's an author and a raconteur, but he wasn't a businessman. He didn't make hundreds of millions of quid. And I just look around, do business and politics mix. I mean, Nick, start with you. What do you think? Aren't there two sort of conflicting influences here?
Well, I think it lies at with how governments are run, because the mayor, the idea that you're actually being elected there by the people to serve the people, and you have to sort of jump through various hoops, etc., it's very different to running say for example a publicly listed company, and your main objective is to make a profit. Serving in government is a calling. Mm. You shouldn't be looking at the bottom line, which is completely different to a listed company and shareholders. Mm.
Yeah, you're quite right. David?
I always use a soccer analogy. And I say government is there to make sure that the field is mowed and that the grass is green and that there's proper lines and that you've got VAR in place, and I think it's business to provide the people that play the soccer and et cetera. You know, in other words, the teams. So it's not government's not there to select the teams or to tell you who's playing. So I always use that analogy. So if government create an environment,
yes,
which is conducive to good sport, in other words, decent teams, decent crowds, that, you know, the good teams will come. And I think that's the kind of analogy. I know it might not be exact, but that's the difference. So I think our government or government is to make sure that you create an environment in which business can thrive. And you don't necessarily need a businessman. You need someone who's going to ensure that the plumbing's there, or that the internet works, or, you know, that the law courts are there. And those are the kind of things. The roads are done well, etc. So there's a lot of dull things in actually wanting to be in administration.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You're quite right. I mean, I remember Davy Root from the Efficient Group always saying to me, it's not the government's job, Lindsay, to create jobs. They've created jobs because they've given jobs to the boys and jobs to the girls. Mm. But
you're supposed to create the environment.
You're supposed to create the environment that creates a job-creating environment. Yeah. I mean, I've used the word twice, but you see what I mean. So, yes, it's quite right. Anyway, we're getting on to politics too much. Let me give you these spot prices on this grinding upward day. The dollar rand is 14.78. The British pound against the rand is 19.02. The euro rand is 16.37. Euro dollar is 110.75. Moving down to the commodity prices. Ouch. Oh, that hurts. Gold price down $22 an ounce to 14.88. The platinum price is down 8 to 928.5. And the palladium price. Nick, my screen is late on palladium. Give me palladium, please.
1766, also down in sympathy, $14, 1,766 an ounce.
Brent crude oil price, on the other hand, going in exactly the wrong direction for South Africa. So we've got the almost the triple whammy. We've got commodities that we produce down, and the stuff that we actually import is up. 63.27 for Brent crude oil, up 77 cents per barrel, or 1.25%. Looking at the Dow Jones, just for a change, it's an all-time record high at 53 points to 27,550. The S&P, extraordinary, 3,080. It's just coming off its highs, but nonetheless, it has achieved a new all-time record high today. And every single international index I'm looking at, from the FTSE to the CAC 40 to the DAX to the Hang Seng this morning to the Australian All Share, everything up. David, this is it's great news. It's worth crazy.
Yeah, it is. You know, there's this air of optimism over China and U.S. trade talks, and it seems that both sides want to do something. We're not sure the speculation is how far this deal is going to go. You know that China want all tariffs lifted. Where America is going to meet it along the way, one doesn't know, but I think there is this desire to do a deal. And against that, the markets have been very strong, because the data, apart from jobs that we're getting, is not all that encouraging. You know, it seems to be it's not bad, but it's not great. So I know that the jobs number got the markets going, but I think at the moment the biggest push is coming from optimism around trade.
No, the actual just seconding what David's saying. The actual hard data, the ISM numbers, the real data. Though some of them are a little bit backward looking, have not been great. And to justify an all time high in the PE on the S&P now close to north of 20, the market's not cheap. But yes, a bit of euphoria, a bit of froth with this deal. And yeah, you know, while it's here, let's take it.
On this quiet day when there's not really much news, I'm just looking at the stock exchange news. Service announcement says there's a set of results from a company called Astoria. There's a trading update from Trematon, but really not going on there. So I want to sort of broaden our argument, or rather our discussion, a little bit. And I want to talk about the extended nature of the current economic and market upswing. The old phrase, this time it's different, could it possibly be true this time? Is it different this time because inflation's under control, there's full employment in the world's largest economy, China, despite the fact it's slowing down, if we can believe the figures, is still going at 6% a year, which is extraordinary in my view, and yet there doesn't seem to be any inflation in the world, wages are ticking along quite nicely, as I say, and the stock market keeps going up, despite the fact that there's so much liquidity being pumped into the system, notably at the moment by the Fed, which is pumping in again without saying it's QE, 60 to 80 billion per month. David, you've seen so many ups and downs and downswings and crashes. What do you think?
It's hard to read. It's hard to read it. But the only way I read it is there doesn't seem to be a desire to really get out the market for the very reasons that you've identified, that interest rates are low. So there's no attraction to go into the bond market. Low inflation, therefore your dividend yields are fairly attractive. And businesses are doing well. They're not doing badly. Yes, there is low growth. We know there's low growth, but there is growth. It's not recession. So I think against that backdrop, businesses are still doing pretty well. And, you know, when you look ahead to some of the tech spend that's taking place and the developments, there's still quite a bit of activity in certain areas that make equities, are pretty attractive. A lot of the destocking that we saw this year in terms of tech development, in terms of building the cloud, of various other aspects, you know, I think are starting to reverse, and we're seeing more spend on semiconductors. We're seeing more spend. You know, a lot of the stock has already worked its way out. We're going to see more spend on smartphones. So there are quite a few areas that are attractive, you know, that continue to draw investors in. So I think, how do you explain it? It's not easy because I don't want to rattle on in that, but it's not easy to explain. But I think the best is I don't feel downside, too much downside at these kind of levels.
Yeah, I mean, my two cents worth. I mean, there was a very famous slogan used by, I mean, Lindsay, you might remember this, by Maggie Thatcher and the Conservative period, when she said there is no alternative, and that's been shortened to be used a lot now as TINA. There is no alternative, and I've seen it used more and more. There is no alternative in a negative interest rate environment and negative yielding bonds. And for God's sake, we've got negative yielding junk bonds now. You know, what is your alternative? You're getting 2% yield on the S&P, even though it's really expensive. There's no alternative. And I think that's also something that has to be considered with modern day investors, is they're almost forced to chase equities. And for now, I think that it's just going to carry on ticking along.
You used to work in London, Nick. I mean, it's not as if you're a millennial, but you're not wet behind the ears, so you know what's going on. You've seen
I've seen a couple. I was on the live floor in the early 90s, and then yeah, I sat through the middle of the 2000 crash. I was sitting in Europe. Yeah,
yeah,
so but I've got a couple of scars. A couple of scars.
What do you think? I mean, this is 10. It's 10.5. In fact, in March of next year, this will be an 11-year bull market. It's unheard of.
Yeah. But I mean, David will back me up on this. You know, that old expression. You know, bull markets don't die of old age. But a couple of things. concern me, and I was going to send a note out to clients later on this evening, is little things. For example, I keep a close eye on things like the volatility indexes, implied volatility, my sort of option background. And there is no risk pricing in the option markets. Zero. In fact, yesterday the VIX hit an all-time low for the year, 12%. It normally traditionally trades anywhere between, this year the average has been 60%, 16%, and over long term the average has been closer to 22%. It's at 12, which says that there's no one is buying any downside protection whatsoever. So there's a certain level of complacency. Yeah. That's the first thing. The second thing is every single weekend on a Sunday evening, the CME publishes what they call the Commitment of Traders report.
Oh, yes.
That shows, you know, there's a blast from the past. Those who still read those reports. That shows the open interest on the futures contracts and breaks it down into speculators, into producers, and into retail. The open interest this weekend on Sunday, as of the end of, I think it's either Thursday or Friday night, the number of short positions on people selling volatility on the VIX is the highest since records began in 1990. So the entire marketplace and his mother is now short vol at the lowest on record. The S&P 500 is at the highs of all time. In fact, we've had all three, the Dow, the Nasdaq, and the S&P all-time high. That makes me very, very nervous. And I want the party to continue. I'm a stockbroker. We can't have crashes. We need good times. But my goodness, it's starting to look a little bit stretched, and complacency is setting in a little bit, I think.
You know what, against that, and I'm not criticizing it, because there is a concern against the backdrop that we're seeing when complacency comes in. But one of the issues is there hasn't been big money behind this. The money's only started to come. It's only started to come now.
There's been a lot of money on the sidelines. You're right.
And I think
a lot of money sitting in bonds.
Right. So it's only started to come in now. Because of this fear of missing out.
Look, I must say, I'm tying exactly what David's saying now, isn't that, you know, that in the last final leg of a bull market of the cycle, that can be very expensive if you're not involved. You can easily get 10-15% in a final push at the end.
Yeah.
And that can impair your performance hugely over time. That final little push at the end of it.
I don't think we've seen that yet, because right up to the point where we hit this recent high, most commentators have actually been, or most managers have been, calling the market short, and in other words, expecting downgrade your exposure to equities. Take some kind of start writing puts, or sorry, start writing calls. Apologies, start writing calls at these kind of levels. In other words, mitigate your risks and that, because things are going to work the other way. So there's been quite a negative force out there in the market. Suddenly it goes up against everybody's expectation. And now everyone's question, did we call it right or not? And that's the worst thing, is that they start reversing those recommendations. People rush in and we get that leg. I'm with you. We still need, before
the final
we
squeeze
say,
up,
we need that squeeze up. Yeah.
And goodness me, I mean, the volume yesterday, David, I mean, not even 15 billion value traded. I mean, you only have to look closer to home where we are to see that there's not a lot of people participating in the squeeze up.
No, our market's dead. No, yeah, there is no market. I mean,
don't be so dramatic.
Okay, you two.
I'm talking global markets.
Let's talk about the JSE in a moment. I just want to say one thing on that Commitments of Traders report. When I came to South Africa in 1988, I worked for a commodity trading company which was run by a chap who used to get the Commitments of Traders religiously. It used to, Nick Kunze, come out, I think, on a Monday, and it would detail the commitments of traders from the previous week. But all the big traders, all the big people with an awful lot of vested interest in their position, said to the, I think the SEC or something, and said, or the CFTC, no, the Commodity Futures Trading Commission.
It was the CME.
In the state. So the CFTC eventually had to delay it by, I think, 2 weeks, because too many people were getting too much inside information and everybody was making money. They'd say, well, there's this massive short position in gold, so therefore we've got to be short in gold, and these are big traders, these are hedgers, etc. So the Commitments of Traders is a very, very interesting thing.
It's a very powerful tool. As you said, it's a little bit delayed. I think it's up to Wednesday, and then they release it on a Sunday. But I mean, it was made famous By a chap who invented an indicator called the Williams percent R.
Oh, my uncle Eddie.
My uncle Eddie, your uncle Eddie. Anyway, that's kind of it. It was a sort of a momentum indicator, but if you actually strip it down to look at the Committee of Treasury report, it's quite a nice. It is a little bit. It's a few days delayed now, but it just gives you a snapshot. It's, as I said, it's broken out into speculators and retail and producers, and it gives you an idea of where things are going. For example, as of Sunday night, the it's not exact science because the open interest on the gold futures were people getting longer and longer and longer. Or someone's hurting today.
Someone is hurting today. On the top five major moves on the JSE today, we have the following shares. Dis-Chem. Horrible day yesterday, good day today, up 6.4%. Old Mutual up 4.2%, RMH up 4.1%, Sasol up 3.75%, and Woolies up 3.4%. Any of those that you own, David Shapiro?
I think Dis-Chem came out with a rather tragic report. I think maybe the market knocked them a little too far, and there's some kind of recovery. I still think those results have to be looked in greater detail before we make a comment. Things are not going well there. And I think one has to start to look at management, whether they've cannibalized the business or whether they can actually fulfill the growth. I think we spoke about this yesterday, but I think it's a bit of a turnaround today, which has lifted the market. So yesterday down 9%. We bounced back about 6%. So we still net down 3%.
Nice day in Sasol too today, even with a stronger rand. So nice to see that turning around.
Yes, so it's coming towards the top of its range. I think the recent high has been 307. The recent low has been around about 250.
Yeah, nice volume too.
Yeah, it's good. On the downside, Nick, I'm going to gravitate towards you when it comes to the negatives. A telcom down 7.5%. That's a big move into prop.
Why me with the negatives?
I don't know. Because you don't like football.
Take a beating more, yeah?
Into prop down 7.2%. AngloGold Ashanti down 6.8%. Harmony a 5.33% loser. And Goldfields down 5.1%. Obviously, the last three there. AngloGold, Harmony, Goldfields. Yeah. Because of the precipitous fall in the gold price in US dollar
price,
terms.
Which literally turned around. We had some current account deficits numbers out of the States later on this afternoon, and that took the dollar all of a sudden reversed from being weaker all day to firmer. And when the guys came and dumped spot gold, and obviously it knocked our guys. Telkom in Pacific, the biggest down on the day, 7.46%, closed at 62.50 today, came out with a trading update earlier.
Yep.
Well, actually releasing earnings, and HEPS coming in at 197 to 164 cents, which was a lot lighter than the market was looking for. Normalized HEPS also a lot lighter than the market was looking for. And the stock a little bit under pressure, but I mean, it was interesting. It wasn't so long ago. It was up at $100 and they were talking about, they're going to sell off their property and they're going to spin it into a property fund and all this sort of stuff. And, ultimately, hasn't quite materialized. I think it's sort of sinking a little bit back to where it should be, but it's come off quite hard actually in the last couple of months.
As you mentioned, from that 100 all the way down to where it is today, about 65 or wherever thereabouts. But that was a, if you look at their trading statement, I mean, there's been a massive increase in their finance charges amongst other things. And I think the market knew about this, and this has been driving. Exactly. This has been driving the share down. But as you say, but Nick, we couldn't understand that increase. You know, this was a share when everything else was going the other way.
Well, it broke 100. I remember saying cynically to someone, but like unless I'm missing, unless these guys are going to rip the copper out the ground and sell it, I don't understand how it's trading at $100. But anyway, I mean, it came back down to earth a little bit.
Yeah. It came
from 11, didn't it?
50 rand. Ooh. Yeah. I know. It's mad. Anyway, because that rise and it just kept going steadily higher and higher. You know, without any real reason.
And when you start, as I said, you start hearing all the left field explanations about how they're going to sell off their property and repackage, and then it's like, no. Anyway.
Nick, give us the JSE indices, please. You know, the banks, the financials, the resources, the retailers, the golds, the platforms, all those things, please.
Yeah, okay, quickly. So it's an all-share decent day. That started the big one, up 0.56% on the session. Top 40 not far behind, actually better, just ahead of it, 0.61% to the firmer. Energy sector, 1.91%, that's your Sasols. Financials had a good day, 1.54% firmer. Basic materials, 0.72%. And on the other side, obviously, gold shares dragging it down. But otherwise, I'd have to say not a bad session on a Tuesday.
And the volume?
Volume traded, I just wrote this down, 22.3 billion.
Oh, so nice, so that's back about 7 billion more than yesterday. That's very good.
Yeah, and on an update, so looking better.
Okay, my quote of the day comes from Cyril Ramaphosa, who's been talking on the first day of this conference. I don't know when these were, it actually doesn't give dates on these things, but he says the following. There's two quotes. Number one, I believe that our economy is not a 1 or 2% growth economy. I believe it can grow at 4%, and we can revitalize our economy if we do the right things. This must have been a year ago, because the latest the latest is that there's going to be a 0.5% growth this year. So he's quite right when he says it's not a 1% or 2% growth economy. It's a 0.5% growth economy. That's the first thing. And then he says at the end, in a very sweet way, I will try to work very hard not to disappoint the people of South Africa. Keep trying, Cyril. Keep trying. You're going to do it. Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Nick Kunze is from Sanlam Private Wealth. David Shapiro is the Deputy Chairman of Sasfin Securities. And that was the 5 o'clock shadow. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox. strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Made possible by Prudential Investment Managers.